Judiciary Committee. We have a series of bills in front of us today. Some of them are going to be hearings, and some will be work sessions and hearings on several of the bills. So we'll be mixing those up, hopefully moving some bills out. The first bill in front of us is House Bill 2421. Representative Sides.
Thank you, Chairperson Burton. It's quite a joy to be in front of you today. I also would like to introduce Moselle Reinhardt, who is a constituent of mine, who is basically the one that got me going on this particular issue or idea that is contained in this bill. House Bill 2421 is a pretty simple bill in a sense. It requires that law enforcement agencies, at the time of a traffic violation or citation, have it signed by the person that they're giving it to. The basis of this is an experience that Mrs. Reinhardt went through, and as I talked with other law enforcement agencies like the City of Salem, they at this particular time do not require tickets to be signed. This led into experience that she had. I think if it's okay, Mr. Chairman, I'll let her testify now and then come back and close it off.
Certainly. Ms. Reinhardt?
Well,
Would you, for the record, state your name and address?
It concerned, my address is 755 Summer Street. My name is Moselle Reinhardt.
Thank you.
It concerns my grandson. He supposedly got two tickets, one for driving without his license and the other for not having insurance. But somebody gave his name when they got the ticket. And so when he went to get his driver's license renewed, they told him he had two tickets that were unpaid and that he could not renew them. So we went down and got a copy of those tickets. And then he went to the officer that issued them and said, "Would you identify me as not being the person you gave these tickets to?" And she said, "I can't. It's been too long ago." And so then we had to go another route because he refused to pay something he wasn't guilty for, and I wouldn't have let him anyway, and because he's never driven without license and he's never driven without insurance, because I personally have paid the insurance, so I know that he hasn't. But she couldn't identify him. But if his signature had been on that ticket, she could have sent a note over. She could have verified that it wasn't his signature. She could have sent a note over and had those tickets dismissed. But since we couldn't get that done, it took us 30 days that this kid went without license. He lost a job with AC&E Electric because they wanted a delivery boy and he didn't have any license. And by the time we got it resolved, he was 30 days without license, where if his signature had been there, she could have verified that they weren't his tickets. And I don't know of any other state in the union where you don't sign a traffic ticket.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Chairperson, that some enforcement agencies now do this. What this bill is just saying is for every local and state unit to do it. There's going to be testimony here from the state police organization. They would like an exemption, and that is the Waymasters, which we agree to. We understand that. We understand their problem, so we have no problem with what they're going to ask of this committee to make the Waymasters an exempted from this bill. But other than that, I think the bill's pretty self-explanatory. I'd be glad to answer a question.
Okay, other questions? Representative Sides, are you familiar with any with law in other states relating to this? She mentioned that we're the only state in the union that may not require a signature, and I guess I have to admit this, I've had one ticket, and
we
signed for it. It was like Oswego, they nailed me going through there, but
sounds like a frame-up.
Somebody, I think, yeah, somebody else in the district. It was a...
You should have given Representative Springer's name.
maybe I just wasn't caught or something, but anyway, I haven't got him. But I think I signed for that, and
yeah.
I just assumed that there was, in fact, I was, you know, it's a summons kind of thing that you had to sign for them. But apparently this doesn't happen,
right.
Is what you're saying.
Yeah, some do and some don't. And it seems logical to me that they should all have them signed. And then you can get it for a variety of reasons that they're signing an illegal name.
Did your grandson finally get his license back?
Yes,
cleared?
After 30 days of going without license.
Well, any further questions? I think we do have testimony coming from state police and the Waymasters, so we appreciate your coming
Thank
in front
you.
Of us, and we'll
Thank you.
Get through it. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Sides.
And if you don't agree to it, I hope it all, it happens to every one of you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Tells us where we are. Douglas Gleisenskog? If I've murdered that, I apologize.
Bye-bye.
Mr. Chairperson and members of the committee, I am Douglas Gleisenskog, Chief Waymaster for the Highway Division. I am pleased to have this opportunity to present the Waymaster Unit's viewpoint on House Bill 2421. The Oregon State Highway Division has 114 field waymasters that operate 62 weighing facilities statewide, along with conducting portable truck weighing operations and commercial vehicle safety inspections. From these activities, Highway Division Waymasters issue approximately 30,000 uniform traffic citations each year. Highway Division Waymasters are uniformed but not armed. Their authority is derived from ORS 810-530, which states in part that a Waymaster may arrest or issue a uniform traffic citation for certain offenses as if a Waymaster were a police officer. The bail on many of the citations issued by Highway Division Waymasters ranges from only a few dollars to several hundred dollars, and citations with a bail amount of $1,000 and more are not uncommon. Needless to say, truck drivers are often extremely upset about receiving a citation and often vent their anger at the Waymaster. Waymasters realize and accept the fact that a certain amount of anger and verbal abuse from drivers is to be expected. But if ever the saying, silence is golden, applies, it does to Waymaster work. Once a violation is detected, a Waymaster needs to explain the violation to the driver, issue a citation, accomplish any needed legalization, and get the movement back on the road in the least amount of time and with the least amount of conversation possible. Nothing is accomplished by arguing with the driver. To add one more step for a Waymaster to go through by requiring that a driver sign the citation he is receiving could set up the possibility that an already irate driver would become even more incensed to the point that the Waymaster could no longer control the situation. As Chief Waymaster for the Oregon State Highway Division, I would like to go on record that we oppose House Bill 2421 without some sort of an exemption for Waymasters. This concludes my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Gleisenskog. What you're saying is you wouldn't, well, without addressing the main question, your concern is obviously with the Waymasters. That's your opposition is coming into it. Have there been incidents of the Waymasters in ticketing driver, truck drivers of violence or near, I don't know, that's a level, but I mean this apparently has occurred.
Yes, Mr. Chairperson, that there has been. I know of three serious ones and many, many minor ones.
Do the Waymasters usually give those tickets out in the way stations, or are these often out on the road?
Both.
Are there questions? Thank you, Mr. Longside.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. James Stevenson.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Lieutenant James H. Stevenson, assigned to the Patrol Division of the Oregon State Police. House Bill 2421 requires the defendant to sign a summons to indicate receipt of it. In this bill, there is no penalty for a person if he or she refuses to sign the summons, which would seem necessary if a signature is a requirement. I have checked with Washington, California authorities who require signatures on their summons. In those states, a person signs a summons to certify they will appear in court. In Washington and California, there is a penalty for refusing to sign, and a person can be cited or lodged in jail for refusing to sign the summons. I'm not aware of any current problems with the delivery of a summons in Oregon. The Oregon State Police require hand delivery of a summons which allows an officer to testify to the delivery if there is a question to that fact. If we did have a provision to lodge a person in jail for refusing to sign, this would add to the current problem of overcrowded jails. We do not see a need for this legislation. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Were you here when the sponsor and his constituent were here testifying?
Yes, I was.
Could you give me a sense of what you think might have happened there?
Yes, okay. This sort of thing does occur. A person will give a false name, false date of birth at the time of a citation is issued. And there are instances when the officer cannot verify the true identity of that person. They do have the statutory authority to detain them until that person is so identified. But it appears to me the person was not properly identified and the citation was issued anyway. Now, if a signature was required on that document, you could go through our ID bureau and verify if in fact that person's signature was or was not that individual's, which would also put a burden on our handwriting experts. But a person giving wrong identification is a fairly common occurrence.
How common?
Well, not knowing an exact number, but I would say when I worked out of the Beaverton office, why it would occur maybe 3 to 4 times a week, 2 officers on the road.
That means they're probably carrying a fake driver's license then too.
Either that or they don't have any ID whatsoever.
Okay. I was going to ask you about a bill I've got in, but I won't ask you about it. Further questions? Representative Springer?
It seems to me in the 81 or 83 session, we created a new offense, a misdemeanor, of no operator's license, for the express purpose of aiding law enforcement officers so they could, quote, reasonably detain an individual for purposes of identification. How has that worked when a person in those circumstances doesn't have identification? And I would guess the probabilities are very high. There are reasons why that person doesn't have identification or doesn't want to be identified. How would you follow up on that kind of situation, say, if you were out in the field, or how are your officers instructed to handle that kind of situation?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Springer, yes, if a person does not have ID, as you stated, we have the authority to detain them, and that is usually what happens. If they cannot properly identify, they will be detained, maybe taken to the jail, fingerprints taken, whatever the process that would be required to identify that person, they would be held until so identified.
Thank you.
Yes.
Good. Further questions? Thank you, Lieutenant.
Thank you.
Stephen Jacobson.
Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Steve Jacobson. I'm the training director with the Metropolitan Public Defender's Office. I wanted to testify very strongly in favor of House Bill 2421. It was kind of a pleasure to see this. This fills the exact hole that Ms. Reinhardt had mentioned, and it's something that we come across in criminal practice with some degree of regularity. Anybody who's been practicing criminal law for a number of years has had 1, 2, half dozen or up to a dozen cases where either our client has been arrested on a warrant where they claim I never got that ticket or somehow is involved with a person who may have given a false name and have to get involved in the untanglement, the untangling of the things that occur as a result of that. Having the signature there on the citation is just so much a better a way of clearing these up when it happens than trying to have an officer remember from 3, 4, 5 months ago or even years ago a person he gave a citation to. When a person gives a false name, it may be, and they fail to appear in court, a warrant's simply going to issue for the person whose name was used. And that's how an innocent person can get tied up in this procedure, and that's how a defense attorney can get appointed to representing them, and it's happened to me. I'm sure that both Representative Springer and Bauman, in their experience in the DA's office, have had cases come to them with claims from defense attorneys or people that they were the wrong person. So I think it's a very easy way to make sure that justice is done in these cases. I would like to offer an amendment. We did not have typists in our office this morning, as it's closed, so I would. It's part of this is handwritten, and I'll forward it to council. The amendment would simply go to include another section, section 2, that would do exactly the same thing for citations to appear. That we also see this happen in citation to appear cases. Many minor offenses, police officers use citations to appear rather than taking a person to a station to be booked. In those cases, again, the same thing occurs that as occurs in traffic citation or traffic summons situations. People occasionally do give wrong names. Often the names have the correct date of birth with them because they're using either a relative's name or a friend's name. And officers generally, if they check their computer for wants and there's no wants on the person and the date of birth that they've given is correct, they're not going to take them into the station to be fingerprinted, even though the person might not have ID on them. So I think it's just logical to extend it to citations also. Citations in lieu of arrest, those I believe can be accomplished in the way proposed in the amendment. I guess that's all my testimony. I'll take any questions.
Questions? Were you here when the Waymaster testified?
Yes.
Would you have any difficulty with that exception? Have you found yourself defending truck drivers?
I wouldn't have any difficulty with his suggestions. I'm not very familiar with what goes on with that system. I don't think it often ends up in the criminal justice system. I've never been called to represent the person in those circumstances.
Somebody punches somebody out, it might. Okay. Any further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wishes to be heard on House Bill 2421? If not, we'll close the hearing on that bill. I don't know that we want to, we will wait for that to work. House Bill 2448, relating to criminal investigations. Lee Erickson.
Good afternoon, Chairperson Springer, committee members. For the record, I am Lieutenant Lee Erickson, Assistant Division Commander of the Oregon State Police Criminal Division. The department opposes passage of House Bill 2448 as it is written. In 1985, the department investigated 2,913 sexual assaults. Certainly, not all of these investigations required examinations. Without individual review of each case, it is unknown whether an examination was conducted. It is the department's experience that examinations cost between $75 and $200. Based on a worst-case scenario, based on the 1985 statistics, the department would be responsible for paying between $218,000 and $582,000 for sexual assault examinations. There is currently no money budgeted to cover these expenses. In the past, the department has used several means to acquire the needed physical examinations. In some counties, the district attorney's office maintains a physical evidence fund that is used to pay the needed cost. This places the decision-making process in the prosecutor's hands. In some jurisdictions, the county health department is able to provide basic types of examination and evidence collection at no cost to the department. In some cases of child exploitation, the children are placed in the custody of the Children's Services Division, and the examinations are ordered after the child is in custody. At that time, the Children's Services Division pays for the cost of the examination of the child. The bill, as proposed, does not provide any relief for any investigating agency to recover costs of evidence acquisition from a convicted perpetrator. Certainly, the legislature should consider a retrieval of costs from convicted perpetrators. This bill does not allow for any police department to enter into any contractual obligation to provide sexual assault examinations on a competitive fee basis within any community. The department suggests that a sexual assault evidence fund be established. those persons convicted for any sexual offense would pay a mandatory payment into the fund. The payment should be in addition to any other fine imposed by the court. Under the fund, the district attorney's offices could bill reasonable and necessary sexual evidence charges on an as-needed basis. This would allow for the needed flexibility at the local level. This suggestion is fiscally responsible and places the cost of the sexual assault examination directly where it belongs, with the convicted perpetrator. This concludes my testimony. I'll be free to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there other questions, committee? Thank you very much. I believe Chief Sponsor was Representative Phillips, and he'd like to testify on it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Paul Phillips, State Representative, District 9. This bill was requested because of an individual that I knew, that I know, who unfortunately had an incident beyond her control where sort of insult was added upon insult when the cost of the medical examination was placed upon her. I appreciate the previous testimony that get the money from perpetrators. How often did we hear that last session, that we ought to go back and get the criminal to pay for those crimes and pay restitution and a variety of other things? And we certainly try that, but I think everybody on the committee knows that what the success or failure of that program is. This was specifically brought up to raise the issue. I think from a public policy standpoint, it is good public policy. The fact that it wouldn't be in the agency budget at this point does not preclude it then going down to Ways and Means and being addressed, as does a lot of other bills that we deal with. And that, in brief, is the reason for the bill, and I think it's something we should examine and go forth. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Phillips. Any questions here?
I have one that is not just ask Representative Phillips, not just on the basis of your sponsorship and support of the bill, but in light of your legislative experience. If the bill passes through this committee and is re-referred to Ways and Means and funding is not added to the agency budget for it, is it then an obligation that the agency is going to have to can I explain the consequences of that?
Under the scenario you laid out, there would be no consequences because the bill wouldn't have passed out of Ways and Means with any appropriation, wouldn't have passed the floor of the House, wouldn't be signed into law, so therefore it'd be a moot point. These are things that we may want to look at obligating the Crime Victims Compensation Fund and looking at avenues to pay for it. There's a number of ways to look at it. I think from a, obviously, it'd be could happen potentially, but it's difficult for me to speak on behalf of a victim. But I think this is the type of incident where we, from a public policy standpoint, should be extremely sensitive to the trauma that would be created from the situation.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Representative Phillips.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wishes to be heard on House Bill 2448? That will close on that hearing. And let's see. Okay, we have House Bill 2158, 2179, 2180, 2182, and 2186, which are possible public hearings and work sessions. We've had public hearings on these bills before, but I understand there may be individuals who wish to testify or at least recommend amendments, so we'll take those as they go through. And we'll start with House Bill 2158. And I believe Mr. Linden, we have, there is in the, you should have your, we held a hearing on this on the 26th of January, is that right, already, so. Yes, Mr. Linden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Bill Linden, the State Court Administrator. Bill During the first hearing on House Bill 2058, there was some discussion about the role of the court in ordering the psychiatric examinations of individuals to determine whether they are alleged dangerous offenders. The amendment that we've proposed, and which I believe has been distributed to you, would add language in line 6 to say that the court, and this is the new language, upon motion of the district attorney shall order a pre-sentence investigation. And that just merely states in law what is the actual practice, and I think is responsive to the discussion you heard last time about whether this ought to be a state or a county expense. These exams are really for the benefit of the prosecution. There's no defendant out there who wants to be found to be an alleged dangerous offender. And so the amending language would merely restate what is the actual process. So the fact the court is ordering the examination, we don't believe should be the trigger for who pays, because these are, again, exams that are for the benefit of the state, so to speak, in the sentencing process. Be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Any questions, committee? Thank you, Mr. Lennon. I don't know, is there anyone else that had anything before the committee on this matter? Good. Are there any questions about the amendment? Anyone wish to make a motion? Chair will entertain a motion. Representative Phillips?
I'd like to move that we amend the bill. Amend House Bill 2158 as suggested to insert on page one of the printed bill, line 6, after court, insert upon motion of the district attorney. I believe that is the total of the amendments, if I'm correct.
That is it. Okay, so Representative Philip moves the amendment to be made on line 6 of page 1 of the printed bill to insert the words upon motion of the district attorney after the word court. Any questions about the amendment? Is there any objections to the amendment? There being none, we'll insert that. Chair, entertain a motion on the bill. Representative Springer?
Well, if I may, I've got a question, I guess. I'll be glad to place the motion, although I'm not sure I'm going to vote for it. I guess the letters and correspondence, Mr. Chair, that I've received is there's some concern about whether or not there's going to be a cost shift in this, and I'm not sure if that's the intent of the sponsors or if that's the unanticipated result. I don't know if we have the sponsors here today or not, but I know we do have one letter from the Association of Community Mental Health Program Directors, which apparently is proposing at least one change in the way the costs ought to be paid. Maybe they're suggesting, I think they are suggesting, that the judicial department be asked to accept responsibility for those costs, and I think Mr. Linden's made it clear that they don't feel that's appropriate.
So this is an either-or situation. Mr. Linden, do you want to speak to that?
Mr. Chairman, the risk of repeating myself, our position on who ought to bear the expense of this is solely founded on the issue of who do these exams benefit. And I don't believe the State Indigent Defense Fund, which is an ancillary component of the Judicial Department budget, ought to be the state entity to absorb these costs, because they're not for the benefit of those individuals covered under that fund. I guess beyond that, I'm not certain what I'd recommend, where I would recommend these costs be absorbed, but I just don't think the Indigent Defense Board is a place that they ought to be placed.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Lennon. Well, is there Is there a motion to send this up to the full committee?
I'll so move, Mr. Chair.
Representative Springer.
As amended.
Representative Springer moves to send House Bill 2158 as amended to the full committee. I gather with no recommendations.
Oh, I'd recommend that we do pass as amended. Reviewing my notes, Mr. Chair, I'm reminded, I guess, that the testimony of one of the proponents at our first hearing was that even though the statute, I guess, permits or mandates that the cost of the examination shall be paid by the county, I guess, in fact, there's not been a billing procedure in place. However, it appears that the health division or mental health division intends to begin billing folks sometime soon if they haven't already done so. But we also have communication, I guess, from the mental health division from Mr. Murray addressed to yourself stating that to the best of their knowledge, there are resources in the community which would permit examination at the local community level.
And I believe we also had some individuals in from the DA's office, from the District Attorneys Association, that generally testified the same way.